Our detail outline, there's one for you on the back table. We're beginning a new series of messages from the book of Ecclesiastes. It's been a while since we have been in the Old Testament, and so today we're going to do an in-depth study of the life of Solomon. Narcissus is one of the classic figures in mythology. He was going home one day after a successful hunt, and he happened to go by a little pool of water. And this water was deep, and it was crystal clear. And Narcissus looked in that pool, and he saw his own image. And immediately, he fell in love with himself. He thought, why, I've never seen a face so beautiful, so handsome as that face looking back at me in the pool. And so he walked over to the edge, and he looked at himself, and he said, why, I'm more attractive than Apollo. He said, I have more appeal than Bacchus. And he just couldn't take his eyes off of his own reflected image. The only person who observed him was Echo. Narcissus was the son of a river god, and Echo was a nymph. She was a tree nymph, and she watched him look at himself. She observed him, and she just couldn't take her eyes off of him, and she longed for his love. But Narcissus was so overwhelmed with his own appearance, with his own beauty, he could look in no other direction. He stood there for hours. He stood there for days. He didn't drink. He didn't eat. And he became dissipated. And suddenly, he began to get sick. But he wanted so badly to embrace himself more than he already had. And so, you know what he did? He leaned over so that he could embrace that reflection, and he fell into the pool and he drowned. The only remnant we have is Echo. You might hear a whisper coming from the lips of Echo. He was so beautiful. Wow. So we begin a new series from this Old Testament book called Ecclesiastes. And this book was written by Solomon. And we're going to do some expository teaching on the life of King Solomon. And Solomon was the author of this book, and Solomon was a full-fledged, 100% thoroughgoing, narcissistic person. Make no mistake about it. He fell in love with himself. He was number one in everything he was about. Now, folks, you and I live, let's get honest, we live in a generation that is absolutely filled with narcissistic people. And many of us are caught up in it. We really are. The millennials That group of people, age 18 to 38, are, generally speaking, narcissistic young people. You ask, well, how do you know that, Dell? Well, Facebook, iPad, iPhone, Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. All these things in which people communicate with someone out there in cyberspace. And all of us are caught up in the same trap. We are becoming more and more narcissistic than any other generation in our lifetime. Just look around next time you are in a restaurant. People will be sitting at a booth, and that couple, whoever they may be, will each have an iPad, iPhone, and they will be communicating with someone on their gadget out there someplace, and they are absent from the conversation at the table. It's true. They have very little interest in what's going on at the table, a whole lot of interest in what's happening on Facebook, Snapchat, or Twitter. And so we say things like this. Let's see. Let me take a selfie. And let me make sure that those who follow me on Facebook and Twitter are aware of all the exciting, wonderful things that's happening to me. Look how I look. I'm going to put them right out there in full view of the watching world, who is just waiting to see the people I've seen, places I've been, and the thoughts that I have. Narcissistic. We see this clearly in the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon wrote that book. He also wrote Proverbs, and he also wrote the Song of Solomon. And in the book of Song of Solomon, and in the profound book of Proverbs, he talks about relationships, good stuff. Talks about life and marriage, really good stuff. He talks about business, excellent resource. It's a profound book, and Solomon wrote them. Even though Solomon professed to be a searcher, professed to be a philosopher, he professed to be someone who really did not know much about God and really wasn't interested in God at this season in his life. Solomon was totally narcissistic. But my, oh my, look what happened to him. He began a fabulous beginning. For some reason, my pointer is not working. There we go. He had a fabulous beginning at the outset. Let's look at the profile of Solomon. As I said, he wrote the Song of Solomon, he wrote the book of Proverbs, he wrote Ecclesiastes. He had a very good beginning. He inherited a kingdom from King David. He was brilliant. He had everything you could imagine, everything you wanted, he had. He was tutored and mentored by a God-fearing prophet. You know who that was? His dad. His dad mentored and tutored him. In the beginning of his life, we read about it. Let's take a close-up look at his life in the book of 1 Kings chapter 3. We read about the early years of King Solomon. Chapter 3, verse 3, it says, "Now Solomon loved the Lord." Isn't that a great commentary one can leave as a legacy? When someone recalls your name, they will say, you know what? That woman really loved the Lord. Or he really loved the Lord. What a great commentary one could have. Then he says, he walked in the statutes of his father David. God-fearing man. He loved the Lord. He walked under the statutes, the principles of the commandments. And we learn a lot about Solomon in these three books, 1 Kings, Ecclesiastes, and in 2 Chronicles. But it has one little word there. Notice what it says. He walked under the statutes, the principles of the commandments, except he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. In other words, Solomon compromised his spiritual values. And what he did, he married a lot of wives from other nations in order to bring peace to Israel and to have alliance for military and for trade purposes. So he was. And so as he brought these wives into the land, he told them, "Sweetheart, bring your own religion with you. We'll find a mountain. We'll name a mountain on that place for you, and we'll build an altar there, and we'll burn incense to your God. And it's okay. After all, we are a pluralistic society," which they were not. They were a theocracy. But nevertheless, he used the means to find peace and purpose in Israel to meet the end that was there. And so he compromised. The Bible says in other places that all of these wives turned him away from God. Turned him away from God. But what a wonderful beginning Solomon had. And God visited him. You read this in the fifth verse. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream at night, and God said, get this, ask what you wish me to give you. Can you imagine that? How would you like for God to come alongside you and say, ask anything you want, I'll give it to you. That's what happened to Solomon. What do you want, Solomon? God was offering him a blank check. Anything you need, I'll give it to you. Now notice how Solomon handled that request from God. Verse 7. Now, Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, yet I am but a little child. Here you see the humility of King Solomon. He says, I do not know how to go out and to come in. Your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people, that there are too many to be counted or numbered. So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil. You find that story in 1 Kings chapter 3. Folks, the most important thing that we need in life is the gift of discernment. It's true. If we don't have discernment in our life, excuse me, is going to stay messed up, confused, chaotic. From now on until the day we die, we will live a messed up life if we do not have the gift of discernment. Without this gift of discernment, you know what we do? We make poor choices in life. We make choices and not consider the consequences of the choice that we have just made. We just make choices. You know what else happens when we do not have the gift of discernment? We weave ourselves in and out of poor relationships. We never can find that right one because we don't have the gift of discernment. And wisdom is expressed through discernment. And so Solomon was really gifted. Solomon was, without question, the most successful man who ever lived, who ever walked upon this earth. In terms of success, no one can even begin to compare to the success that Solomon had. He was brilliant. He was a philosopher. He was a seeker. He was a searcher. And once you open the pages of the book of Ecclesiastes and 1 Kings chapter 3 and 2 Chronicles, the whole book really, Solomon forces you and me to read these books honestly, intelligently, to face the big questions that we have about life. They're there in this book. For example, if we had time, I could pick out anyone. I could say, hey, would you please stand up and tell us who you are? Who are you? How would you define your life? How would I define my life? Who am I? I read an interesting story about Andy Williams. I have a lot of his music, by the way. And years ago, he gave a concert in a rest home at the peak of his career. He sang beautifully, magnificently. And all those in that senior citizen rest home just applauded him after each song that he sung. They were thrilled. And so Andy Williams walked up to this one woman, and the little lady said, sir, you really need to go professionally. She said, you've got great talent, and the world needs to listen to your kind of music. And Andy Williams stooped down and looked at her and said, do you know who I am? And she said, no, but if you'll ask the lady at the front desk, she'll tell you who you are. Profound question, who am I? Solomon forces us to take a look at these big issues of life. He really does. You see, Solomon was looking for it. He was in search of it. What is it? What's life all about, in other words? What's valuable about life? What contribution can I make? What will bring me happiness and satisfaction? What will give me real meaning and purpose for my life? And folks, every one of us here today is looking for exactly the same thing. We may not realize it, but everybody is. What's life all about? What's valuable about life? What is significant about life? Solomon forces the reader to deal with these big issues of life that most of us really don't like to deal with at all. Because we live in a society where most of us, we got to have the music playing. We've got to have the television turned on, whether we're watching it or not. It's noise. We surround ourselves and our schedule with activities and with hobbies or with movement with other people. We're on the go 24/7. The brain never shuts down, even when we're asleep. It's racing forward to the next day of anticipation of what we're going to do and what we're going to see. Go, 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 go. But as you read and study Ecclesiastes, Solomon says, hold it. Hold everything. Let's slow this train down and bring it to a stop. Let's see if we can find some answers to these gigantic questions that we all need to ask ourselves. There's nothing more profound than, who am I? Solomon doesn't give up. He says, life without meaning is useless. It's all vanity. And so Solomon takes us through 12 chapters in his book, and in the second chapter of Ecclesiastes, look what he says. He says, I said to myself, you ever talk to yourself? That's pretty good therapy, by the way. Self-talk. It's good to talk to yourself. He says, come now, I will test you with pleasure to enjoy yourself, and behold, there's that little word again, it. He said, it too was futility. So he's looking for it. Where can I find it? Where can I find significance? Where can I find happiness? What is it? It's meaning for life, purpose for life. Then he says, I'm going to go through some situations here, and I'm going to test everything that I can to see if in any of these endeavors, I will find significance, I will find fulfillment, I will find purpose for my life. And he walks us through them. And as he walks us through them, we walk with him. Because we get up in the same kind of pursuits that he got caught up in. So, who am I? Where am I going? Where did I come from? What's my purpose in life? What kind of a difference, impact can I make on anybody else that invades my circumference as I live here on this earth for 2, 3, 4, 10? He says, come now, I will test you with pleasure, so enjoy yourself. He's already told us that pleasure isn't the answer, it's not it. But look at the pleasure he said in verse 2. He said, I tried pleasure, that wasn't it. He said, I said, of laughter, it's madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explained with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine. He liked his wine, probably to the excess of. While my mind was guiding me wisely in how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the Son of Man to do under heaven and the few years of our lives. He starts off with pleasure. Logical place, isn't it? But it wasn't it. I want to find meaning in life, happiness in life. Let's just try pleasure. Wasn't it? Then he said, well, let's try laughter. Sometimes if you want to have a good laugh, check out a DVD of comedy. Now, for me, I kind of date myself, but when I need some humor in my own life, because I'm kind of a melancholy, but when I need some humor in my life, I have a whole shelf of Red Skelton videos. And I watch them all by myself, and I lose myself in laughter. I also like to watch Abbott and Costello. I have a lot of those DVDs as well. Laughter. We all like to laugh. We all have a sense of humor, some more so than others. But some people, they laugh all the time, they're jolly all the time, and they have a hard time getting serious. Sometimes you say, now would you get serious just for a minute? That takes a miracle for some people to get serious, because they're laughing all the time. It's almost a protective kind of a layer, to tell you the truth. I mean, I like to laugh, I enjoy pleasure, all of us do. But when we get so caught up in our own humor, in our own cutting remarks, in our own lifestyle, you know, the truth of the matter is we are really trying to cover up for something. Solomon says there's no pleasure, no fulfillment in pleasure. There's no fulfillment in constant laughing. There's no pleasure in pursuing wine and any other addictive behavior pattern that we find ourselves in today. You know something, folks? When there is an emptiness of the heart and there is an emptiness of the soul, you know what? It has to be filled with something. And tragically, the younger generation, and many of us as well, are filling our lives with things that take away our happiness and shorten our lives radically. It's true. So we look at Solomon and we learn from him, and he said, I'm going to try pleasure. He said, I didn't find any meaning in pleasure. That wasn't it. Then he says, I tell you what, I'm going to try projects and wealth and possessions. Surely I'll find it there. Look at verse 4. He says, I enlarge my works. I will build houses for myself. Note the plural in all of these. I will build houses for myself. I planted vineyards. Not just one, but vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks. For who? For myself. Now, by the way, in my little video clip that I put together, did you notice some of those gnomes? Do you know how many gnomes I have? I asked Marianne the other day, Marianne, how many gnomes do you think I have? I won't tell you. No, I'll tell you because I'm such a transparent guy. I have close to 100. I got them scattered all over the yard, front yard, backyard. They're beautiful to look at. They speak of significance to me. They're there to protect my garden from the deer and dogs. They're beautiful, beautiful. But anyway, this is Solomon. He says, I planted in them the kind of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate the forest of growing trees myself. Now, was he a narcissistic person or not? I say he was. In fact, the first 11 verses of chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes, he mentions I 21 times. He was all caught up with himself. A narcissistic personality he had. Looking for it. Meaning in life. Happiness in life. Pleasure in life. He didn't find it, so he tried projects. All these things he did. He was a horticulturist. He was gifted in agriculture. And certainly he was gifted in construction. He built the temple. Do you know how long it took for Solomon to build the temple in Jerusalem? A magnificent edifice. You know how long it took him? It took him 7 years to build the temple. He also built his own palace. Listen to this. Do you know how long it took him to build his own palace? 13 years. That's a long time. You know how many were on his payroll when he built that palace? Only 30,000 workmen. You see? He did it for myself. I'm going to build projects, put my name on it, get bigger and better and more and more. Then I will find it. I will have a meeting. Drive down Solomon Boulevard. Have a picnic out in Solomon's Park. Go swim in his pools. I'll have significance in my life. My life will count for something. But he got through it all and he said, that's all vanity. Pleasure, don't find it there. Projects, you don't find meaning there. And then he moved on and he said, I'm going to try something else to find it. I'm going to try wealth and possessions. Look at verse 7. I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Solomon was the first ruler in Israel ever to make slaves out of his own people. He said, I possess flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. You can read about the number of animals that he had under his power and his ranches. It's unbelievable. Much bigger than Ben Cartwright of Bonanza, for sure. They're listed in 1 Kings. He said, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. Now listen to this. In 1 year, he collected 666 shekels of taxes. Do you know how much money that is or was? The equivalent of 25 tons of gold. You can take all the multi-billionaires in the world and put them together. They can't even begin to touch the wealth that Solomon had. The most successful man, the wealthiest man who's ever lived under the sun, and now he's trying to find meaning in life, and he's running down all of these dead-end trails, and he said, I didn't find it in pleasure, I didn't find it in laughter, I didn't find it in the projects, I didn't find it, meaning, happiness, fulfillment, purpose for living, and all the buildings I constructed, eye candy for myself. And then he moves on. He says, I just hoarded things of value, property, gold and silver for myself. He said, I didn't find meaning in any of my possessions and my wealth. Then the light bulb came on. He says, well, I know where I can find it. I'll try this avenue. Look at the latter part of verse 8. He said, I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men. Many, many concubines. You know what he did? He thought he would find it in sensuality. He's going to find it as he fulfills all of his passions. He's going to find meaning there. Now, I want to tell you something. Do you know how many wives Solomon had? He had 700 wives. Do you know how many concubines he had? Do you know what a concubine was in those days? She was treated like a wife, but she didn't have the status of a wife. She lived there. So Solomon, guess what? He surrounded himself with 1,000 women. Redheads, brunettes, blondes, auburn hair, gorgeous hair, gorgeous women. Had them all. That is picking. Solomon says, I was a great man, and he was. My goodness, he was. He said, I was filled with pride. He said, look, over all I did. Solomon probably had the largest casting couch in history with all those women. Man, trace his life. Nobody comes close to Solomon. Nobody is even in a close second. They're way, way behind. They'll never get all that Solomon had. And yet, with all that he had, he came up empty, looking for it. I find that amazing. And he expressed all of his pride, but he said, as I marched down every stream, tried everything, went through all the avenues, faced all the big questions, he said, I came up empty. I came up void. Vanity of vanity. All is vanity, he said. That's quite a testimony, isn't it? And some people today are going down the same dead-end trails that Solomon tried to find it. And they come up empty. So, I thought about Solomon as I read the book of Ecclesiastes again and 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles. And I began to think, are there any modern day Solomons? I could name two or three, maybe a few more. But one name kept coming to the top. And I thought about a football player. His name is Tom Brady. I thought about him. Narcissus couldn't have been any more handsomer than Tom Brady. I mean, he is a sharp-looking dude, isn't he? He's articulate, very intelligent. He's a great athlete. Probably the best quarterback in the NFL. That could probably be debated, but he was good. Married to two beautiful women, both models. He's been everywhere, done everything. He has more money than he could spend in two or three lifetimes. You can't find a figure more like Solomon, I think, off the top of my head, than Tom Brady. 5 Super Bowl rings, at 5 of them. You know, if I had the replicas of Tom Brady's Super Bowl rings, in my hilarious moment, I'd probably wear them on both hands. And so when I'm interacting with someone, oh, I see you have been in the Super Bowl. Well, how could you tell? Had five of them. And interestingly, there was an interview on 60 Minutes where he was interviewed on television. Here's what he said in that interview. This is Tom Brady being interviewed. But this was after he only had three Super Bowl rings. He says, you know what? I'm making more money than I thought I would ever make playing the game of football. I have three Super Bowl rings. And then I begin to think, there must be something greater out there than being possessive of three Super Bowl rings. I mean, a lot of people would say, hey man, you've got it all. What else is there to achieve? You've done it all. You've reached a life that's full of purpose and meaning. You have found it, we would say. He said, I reached my goal and the dream of my life, playing football, making a ton of money. But he was still empty on the inside. On 60 Minutes, the interviewers said to Tom Brady, is there anything else? And Tom Brady said, he said, well, I've had conversations with God, and he said, my final summary of my life is, there's got to be more than this Super Bowl ring. There's got to be more than the three Super Bowl rings. Well, he's since got two more. He has five of them. There's got to be more to life than fame, money, women, prestige, five Super Bowl rings. He told the interviewer, there's got to be more to life than this. And the interviewer said, well, Tom, what's the answer? And Tom thought for a moment, and then he said in a very sobering way, he said, well, sir, I wish I knew. I wish I knew. You know people, and so do I, who are out there searching, trying to find it. Solomon, the richest man on the face of the earth who ever lived, had it all. His bottom line was, all of this is empty, meaningless, vanity, vanity. So I thought, how could Solomon, a man who had it all, with all the promises of God, the skills that he had, the brilliant mind that he had, how in the world could he move so far away from God looking for it when it was right under his nose? You know what? I think that if Solomon would give us a piece of advice, I think I know what he would say. He would say, it all starts with one step at a time. And gradually, we begin to live a life of compromise. And we begin to fall in love with the world. I think Solomon would say, watch out for that first step. Make sure you are stepping in the right direction. Exercise the gift of discernment. That's what I think Solomon would say. Then I think Solomon would say, wherever you are going down that dead-end road, it isn't too late to stop. Turn around and come back home to God. Modern-day Solomon, in my opinion, Tom Brady. And I would say to the Solomon-type personalities, it's not in an it. It's in a relationship with Jesus, establishing an authentic relationship with Jesus. Because only Jesus can satisfy the longing of the soul. Listen to this song.
Try to satisfy that longing in your soul. You may search this wide world o'er, but you'll be just as before. You'll never find true satisfaction until you found the Lord. Only Jesus can satisfy your soul. Only Jesus can satisfy your soul, and only He can change your heart and make you whole. He'll give you peace, oh, you never knew. Sweet love and joy, and heaven too. For only Jesus can satisfy your soul.
You know, I've lived a long time in this world, and I know that if you could have fame and fortune, and all the wealth you could obtain, yet if you have not Christ within you, your living will be in vain. You see, there'll come a time when death will call you. Riches and fame cannot help you then. Only Jesus can satisfy your soul. Only Jesus
can satisfy your soul.
To the Lord.